Guitar Will Travel presented by Vintage Guitar Magazine with your host, me, James Patrick Regan, otherwise known as Jimmy from the Deadlies. And today I'm speaking with guitarist and educator Matthew Stevens. In our conversation, Matthew takes us through living in Boston and teaching at Berklee College of Music, and he talks about the struggles of playing instrumental jazz music. Matthew discusses his new album, appropriately titled Matthew Stevens, and the personnel and production of the album. Matthew talks about growing up in Toronto and his start on guitar and eventually his introduction to jazz, which led him to Berklee as a student after playing in rock bands in school. Matthew describes working as a guitarist on a cruise ship at the age of 18 to pay for his Berklee education, and he tells us about his early jazz influences. Matthew describes going on tour right out of school and eventually working with Esperanza Spalding, and Matthew talks gear from the beginning until now and his preferences of Telecasters and Vox amps. Matthew talks tour plans and the expense of touring and touring as a sideman. To find out more about Matthew, you can go to his website, mattstevensmusic.com. That's mattstevensmusic.com. Please subscribe, like, comment, share, and most of all, review this podcast. I'd really appreciate it. And please support Vintage Guitar Magazine and all the wonderful things they do for us guitar players, because they do so many wonderful things for us guitar players. Oh, and if you want to support the show, I have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/haveguitarwilltravelpodcast. Here's my friend Matthew.
Hey there, Matthew.
Got you. Hi, James.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, great. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good. Thanks so much for having me. So I was just going to ask where you're located.
I'm in California, in Napa, California.
Oh, right on. Great. Yeah. Cool.
You are in Boston right now?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm in a little town between Boston and Providence the last 4 years.
Oh, really?
Big change from New York after 20 years there. So, yeah. Cool, though.
Yeah. So what's your commute look like to get to Berklee?
It's easy. That was sort of part of the reason I picked this town, really not knowing anything about it, because it's on a commuter rail.
Okay.
It's, you know, door to door. It's, you know, 40 minutes. Schools are good. You know, there's a lake in town. You know, it's cool.
All right. Right on. Very
good. Yeah.
And so you've been teaching at Berklee for 4 years now?
Yeah. That's what brought me up. That's what brought me up here.
Okay. Yeah. And what are you teaching besides, obviously, guitar?
Yeah. My home department is the ensemble department. And so it's mostly like coaching small bands. And then I, about a third of the time there is teaching guitar lessons. Yeah.
The private guitar lessons?
Yep.
All right. Very good. And yeah. Before there, you were at the New School?
I was doing, I taught adjunct at the New School and adjunct at Peabody a little bit, but
wow.
I was pretty late to it. New School was like very informal. They have kind of a particular way of doing things where students can just kind of study with whoever they want to in New York.
Oh,
and,
wow.
You know, but the pay just runs through the school. And then Peabody was a pandemic thing. So really, this Berklee thing is the first, my first real kind of foray into any teaching, you know.
Yeah. And
cool.
So you've been just playing music this whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's tough for everybody, but I can only imagine playing instrumental jazz music, you know.
Well, you know, it's like, it was more just the trade-off of being away from home so much, you know, I have little kids and just feeling like looking for a way to find a little more balance with that, you know, and not having, I mean, cause prior to this, really, it was like 95% of my living was involved, you know, getting on a plane and doing the thing.
Yeah, exactly. The album is gorgeous. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
And the depths of styles that are on it are also pretty amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. And did you record that in Providence or Boston or no, New York?
No, I in LA actually.
Oh,
I went
in LA.
There's a studio there called NRG that first worked at 2014. The first record I ever did with Esperanza Spalding was recorded there, and I knew nothing about it.
Uh-huh.
And I loved the studio. I loved the engineer, and we just stayed friends and kept in touch. And he recently took it over, and so we went out there for 3 days and did it there.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great. And the drummers and so who all is playing on the record for it with you?
Yeah. So gosh, there's a lot of folks. So the core band, a drummer named Eric Dube, who's one of my oldest and dearest friends, and he's played with everybody from Sarah Jarosz to Chris Thiele to Paquito de Rivera to Wynton Marsalis. And we actually went to Berklee together. You know, we were roommates 20 years ago, and that's where we, in New York when we first moved after school. He's in the band. Kyle Miles is a great bass player from Boston who's tours with Michelle and DeGhiaccello and lots of other folks like that. Unbelievable musician.
Sure.
Chris Fishman, keyboard player. who's from LA, and he's on the Pat Metheny tour right now, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then Josh Johnson, the alto player, and, you know, just total unbelievable musician and conceptualist who's like, you know, really getting out there doing lots of different things. Most recently, he produced this record with me, but more on a much bigger scale, he produced Flea's solo record.
Oh,
that
wow.
one sort of just coming out. Yeah, which is really cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that's kind of the core band. And then there's like lots of guests like Terry Lynn Carrington and Jeff Parker from Tortoise, and Dylan Day, who's a great up and coming slide player, and Joel Ross, vibraphone player on. So, yeah, so lots of folks. You know, it's as everybody knows each other. It's sort of a small community.
And the slide song, the song that you had, I don't remember the name of it, but that was just wild. I loved it. It was fantastic.
Yeah, that's Dylan, Jeff, and I, and Dylan's playing all the slide stuff. I love that too. That might be one of my favorites on the whole record. I love that song.
Yeah,
yeah, he plays so, Dylan just plays unbelievably on that. Yeah.
And you grew up in Toronto?
I did. Yep.
Yeah. What was the music scene like when you were a kid up there?
Man, you know, there was a really, really strong. There's always been a really strong music scene, and there was a particularly strong lineage of jazz guitar playing in Toronto, you know? And I've often wondered if it stems from, well, I think that from my perspective, it stems from Ed Bickert, who, you know, played with Paul Desmond and was Jim Hall often cited as being his favorite guitar player.
Sure.
And I know Lenny Bro lived in Toronto for a long time.
Yeah.
And I wonder if Lenny and Ed were friends. I don't know or how much they interacted, but they have a similar style to me in terms of how they voice chords, and and there's a whole lineage of players that kind of come out of that. I was exposed to that, you know, really, really early on, and constantly. So
sure.
It was a great place to be in the guitar and improvise music. Yeah.
Yeah. Was jazz your thing from the very beginning, or were you no?
No. First song I learned was Smells Like Teen Spirit. So no, I mean, I just wanted to be in bands and to be able to play the music that was such like so intrinsic to the culture that I was enmeshed in and interested in and excited about, you
sure.
know. I did what many others have done and will continue to do, and got a guitar right at about 11 years old, you know.
Uh-huh. So, and were you so did you were studying were you studying jazz or were you studying
no, no. I was just kind of picking up songs by ear. I immediately just joined a band with some friends and when I could play, you know, about three or four chords, and that was the first 5 years of playing for me, and I loved every bit of it. I loved the community of it. I loved the social element. I loved writing songs immediately. I loved the expressiveness of it. I immediately really felt like I found myself in that and found my people in that world. And then I had a friend whose dad was really into jazz and improvised music and you know, sort of was turning us on to all, you know, like Monk Records and Miles Records and Coltrane Records and Bill Evans Records. And I just was like, it was like confounding to me. It was amazing to me. I thought it sounded beautiful, but I also had no idea how anybody could do anything like that. And so it was like, I think my initial draw to it was equal parts, like an immediate kind of emotional connection to it. And also feeling just like, I need to, like, how does anybody do that? I need to figure out how to even do that a little bit, you know? So.
Yeah. And what about classical music? Were you exposed to classical at all? No.
My first instrument was piano, and, you know, and I was going through, you know, a lot of the pieces that young pianists are exposed to and learn to play, but never on guitar. No, I that was never part of my guitar playing life.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Probably would have helped me out a lot, but you know.
And so, I mean, you talk about the camaraderie and stuff. Were you playing in bands in high school?
I was, yeah. I grew up in around the corner from like this really pretty iconic and like a guitar shop in Toronto called the 12th Fret, which is still there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I used to just hang out there all the time. There was like all these teachers around there and also all these great luthiers there and took some lessons with a guy named Dave Dunlop, who's a great guitar player and an unbelievably nice guy. And he actually tours as a duo with Rick Emmett now. That's what he's been doing for a long time. And Dave was, you know, Dave was probably in his early 20s and I was right out of school at Humber College. And I would go and we just kind of learn songs together, you know,
okay.
And he would I would go, hey, I want to learn this Jimi Hendrix solo or something, and he'd kind of help me find my way through it. And he introduced me to some, you know, some guys who were a little older than me in high school, and and we joined it. Maybe had a band all through high school. It was like it was just the best thing ever.
And so were you guys playing clubs or parties
We were playing clubs. It was like, you know, it was the late 90s, and it was like the I feel like there was like a battle of the bands like every weekend, you know. And so you know, and you'd get your stack of tickets from the promoter, and you'd sell them all to your friends and do the whole thing. And so the first show I ever played was at a club in Toronto called the Opera House, which has been there forever, which is also kind of a famed spot. And somehow we kind of unbelievable, as I'm saying, we won this battle of the bands. And right I sort on. Of thought, hey, this is it, man. This is it for me. I'm totally into this. I was hooked.
You went to music school after high school?
Yeah, I it was kind of in a circuitous way. I applied to a jazz program at the University of Toronto and was like totally rejected. and my mom said like, hey, you know, there's this like week long guitar thing that you could go to at this place in Boston called Berklee, you know, you should send them a tape. Yeah. And I sent them a tape and they gave scholarships to go do those weeks at that time. Uh-huh. As I recall. And I went and did that week. And during that week, I auditioned for a scholarship to attend the school. And I got in, I got a scholarship, but I still had to come up with money to pay my, you know, room and board and all that stuff. And I left my parents' house and got on a cruise ship at 18 and spent, you know, last half of being 18, first half of 19 on a boat and playing in a show band and then went to school the following year. Yeah.
You went to this week-long program at Berklee. Yep. And did you immediately fall in love with Berklee?
I did. I think that I it was about like the peers that I met there, you know, and the faculty. And I felt kind of seen and accepted there in a way that I hadn't ever before, you know. It was really cool. It felt like didn't feel rigid, and it felt like something new and that I hadn't experienced where I was from, you know. It was really cool.
Yeah. Did you have a private teacher there? Much like
I did. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I had a number of people. The people that I spent the most time there was Mick Goodrick, you know, I overlapped for a year. I think while I was there, it just happened to coincide with the year or a year and a half that Wayne Krantz was teaching there.
Oh, wow.
And he was, you know, just like, had an enormous impact on me.
Yeah,
you know?
Of course.
Rick Peckham also, and Tim Miller, who was like in his, you know, had to have been in his early to mid 20s at that time, uh-huh. You know? So those are the people that, you know, that I was around a lot there as guitar teachers.
Yeah.
You know?
Was Jim Kelly there when you were there?
Yes. I see Jim every Monday now, I think. I think we teach in rooms next to each other on Mondays.
Right on.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. Is he a friend of yours?
I studied with him while I was there.
Really? Oh, that's so cool. I gotta tell him that we met. That's cool.
Yeah. And his method book is one of my favorites of all.
It's
basically he just has pieces that he composed.
Yeah,
and then he has all the music, and he was teaching out of it for a while.
That's so cool. That's so cool. I have an enormous amount of respect for Jim. He's such a great musician and a lovely, lovely person. Yeah, that's really cool.
So when you started getting into jazz, who were your guys? Who were the people you were listening to?
Yeah, you know, like at first, like I was saying, like being from Toronto, I would go and see Ed Bickert all the time.
Okay,
and A really early influence for me was Grant Green, you know.
Sure, of course. Yeah.
And I loved it because I could hear what he was playing. I could pick up some of it and play it on my own. I could transcribe it, and like it was like so tasteful and so clear and melodic, and there was so much language, and it was like. But it was accessible in this great way for me, and so I feel like I really connected to that. And I remember actually on that cruise ship spending a lot of time transcribing a lot of his playing on a record called Standards, which is a trio record, and feeling like that really connected the dots for me and or gave me a point of entry to like playing through chord changes, you know, that weren't sort of centered around a particular key.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you were working on the cruise ship, were you playing jazz?
Yeah, doing my best to. Yeah, it was like you would do the show band stuff and then you would play these cocktail hours and stuff. And I remember, you know, I had a friend who knew the guy that booked all the musicians, and he said, "Look, I'll get you a job, but you have to, you know, there's a lot of time where you're just kind of sitting around, you know, and so you gotta promise me you're not going to waste it, and you promise me you're going to practice and use the time of your." And so yeah, I took it seriously, and I did, and I had my MIDI disc player, and I would record myself, and you know, I was doing I was really giving it all I had, you know, and I was around some great musicians on that boat who were happy to share their knowledge with me as well too.
Sure. International, much like Berkeley is now, the boat.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
That's fantastic.
Cool. Yeah.
What were the living conditions like in the boat? Were you in the belly of the boat?
You bet. Yep. It was like going from my bedroom at my parents' house to the belly of the boat, the crew quarters, and my first roommate was a guy, great piano player named Hugo from Venezuela, and he was like, he looked out for me. He was probably 15 years older than I was, and he was a great musician, and he was studying with a guy actually in Boston, like a legendary teacher called Charlie Banakis. And it was all via cassette tape, and it was like correspondence, you know?
Wow.
And so like he would pick up his lesson tape at the crew center in Miami every Sunday. And then he'd like do his lesson, and then he'd let me have the tape and listen to it, you know?
Oh, right,
it was like, yeah, it was cool. It was like a nice community of people.
So did you end up graduating from Berkeley?
I did. I did it in 3 years because in Canada at the time there was a fifth year of high school.
Yeah.
And so a lot of those credits were called AP credits. So like
sure.
I was able to So I was able to do it in 3 years.
Right on. Good for you.
Yeah.
That saves money.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
And what did you do once you graduated?
Yeah, so I was pretty lucky because when I was there, I met a trumpet player from New Orleans who named Christian Scott, who now goes by Chief Zion Atunde Adjoa, and he's this unbelievable artist and trumpeter, and he signed a multi record deal with Concord, and we made a record I think right at the end of school, you know, and so I graduated and was immediately on tour, you know, with this guy, and this band. So it was like, and we did a bunch of records, and so it was enough money to get me to, or I could live in New York, pay my rent, and not have to work a day job.
Yeah. That's a sizable amount of money.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was by the skin of my teeth, you know, but it was like,
sure.
You know, made it work.
And were you doing anything else besides, I mean, you weren't working a day job, but were you like busking or anything like that in New York?
No, I was getting out and meeting people. I was going to shows and hanging out and trying to meet other musicians. And at that time there were a lot of, you know, I had a lot of community there from people who had graduated from Berkeley.
Sure.
It was a really, it was a pretty special time. And there was a real culture at that time amongst my group of friends of people just getting together in each other's houses and playing each other's music and
right
practicing
on.
Together,
yeah.
You know? So
and
sort of how we spent our days.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody would get in trouble for being too loud and, you know.
And miraculously, no, I don't know how that happened, but, you know, we sort of managed to keep it cool.
So that first guitar that you got, what was it?
Oh my gosh. So it was a black and white Mexican made Fender Stratocaster.
Okay. You know? Right.
Yeah. And it was great. And then I think I traded it up for, I can't even remember. I think Japanese made Tele thin line or, you know,
sure.
I think that was the second one. And I kind of, you know, traded up until I got a 1988 335, which is right over there.
Okay.
And that was, and I loved that guitar. I played that for years. And,
uh-huh.
And now I mostly play Telecasters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there any particular Telecaster that's your favorite out of all of them?
You know, it's funny. I was playing these Teles by that are made by a company called Mulan in Seoul. It's this builder who's incredible, and it's a one man operation. And Young Jun makes these unbelievable guitars that are like, you know, like really, really to spec, you know, from like, and meant to be these perfect replicas of various eras of Fender guitars.
Sure.
And during the pandemic, like the one that I was playing, it just needed a whole bunch of work, and no one was open, and I couldn't get it fixed. And so I ended up with Fender sent me this a reissue of a Broadcaster.
Oh, wow.
And like they made them for a year. It was like the 75th anniversary, sure. Broadcaster, and it was just a cool guitar. And so I've really just kind of been playing that since 2021 when they sent it to me. And it's like I don't know that it's anything particularly rare or fancy, but it feels good. It's,
yeah, exactly.
And you know, it's like it has an Ash body. And I as far as I've heard, I don't know if it's true or not, but I heard that Fender's not making Ash body guitars anymore.
Oh, I wouldn't know.
But yeah, me neither. But that's what I heard. But I really like it. It's really transparent sounding. And
Is it good just stock?
Yeah, it's just stock.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so, going from a neck on a 335 to a Tele neck, are they similar, the neck styles?
No. Not at all. It took a lot of adjustment. I was like, I played this 335 for years, and the switch was sort of preempted by. Like in 2014, I started working with the bassist and vocalist Esperanza Spalding,
sure.
and the first project I did with her was this record, Emily's D+ Evolution, and it was like this real, like Tony Visconti produced it. It was
sure.
this like real,
yep.
like kind of heavy power trio thing, and I showed up with my 335, and it just kind of wasn't doing what I needed it to do
sure.
for me, and I thought, gosh, let me just try something else. And I, Young Jun, the Mulan people sent me a Tele, and it was sonically, it was great, but it was a really hard adjustment, right? Cause of
yeah.
the scale length and, you know, I like to play 12s and at that time I was playing even a heavier set on the 335 and so it took a lot of getting used to, but it was sort of like a trade off that at the time I was willing to make. And I was sort of like, because I'd been playing that 335 for so long, I was going back and forth between the two of them.
Yep.
You know, I would play the Tele with Esperanza, and then other stuff I would go back to the 335. But it just felt it was hard to go back and forth. And over time, you know, sort of naturally, I just gravitated towards playing the Tele all the time, and that's just what I've done for the last 10+ years.
Yeah. What about amps?
I've for a long time I've played Voxes. So,
oh really? Wow.
Yeah, I just love AC30s.
Yeah. They're heavy, but that's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, yeah. They have a quality that I think is like really unique to them, where like, and you know, of course, like it's all so much about how they interact with the way that you play, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like
course.
Yeah, and so it's not like you know, so I know lots of people like sound absolutely fantastic playing through a Fender Twin or even like a deluxe, a 66 deluxe reissue or something like that.
Same.
But I couldn't make it work for me. And I would always feel like for me, it was like the things would get kind of like, it would lose body in the upper register. It'd be kind of, and feel boomy to me in the lower register. And
yeah.
I felt like, and for me, like an AC-15 too, but an AC-30, like the Vox stuff felt more, it just felt, it felt like it was not as thin in the high register for how I played, and not quite as overwhelming in the low register. So
yeah. Is it just a recent AC30 or is it an older one?
So I have a 62, and I have a couple of the newer hand wired ones, which I really like too.
Right on. That's great.
With the green, I'm partial to the greenback speakers, you know.
Yeah. Yes, of course. Yeah. So when you're touring, are you touring with the band that's playing on the record?
The core band? Yeah, it'll be the core band on that record. Yeah. Maybe minus Chris Fishman, who's, you know, cause he, as I think I mentioned earlier, he's on a year long Pat Metheny tour right now. So
yeah.
Well,
that's fantastic. And I mean, yeah. it's, and you're making ends meet by, you know, it's expensive to tour with all those people.
Oh my God. I mean, it's like, I mean, you know, I'm not touring with that group nearly as much as I am as a side person still. And so really what the way that it shakes out is I make my living touring with other people and teaching at Berklee and funneling that into my own stuff and
hoping it pays.
Yeah. And making, and, you know, getting to walk away with a little bit, or at least not being, in the hole, you know, at the end of something.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Yeah.
And do you find yourself mostly on the coast? So, I mean, you have one date in Dallas I saw, but are you mostly on the coast?
So, I mean, yeah, essentially. And then, usually like what it's looked like historically for me is like, yeah, just some spot dates on the coast and then a healthy run in Europe. And then, you know, ideally a few nights in one of the clubs in Tokyo. And that'll usually do it. So wow. Bit by bit, you know, trying to build it up and make it a bigger part of the equation in terms of the balance, you know.
It's great that you can make it work. So a spot date in Tokyo is not cheap getting everybody there.
Well, you know, it's so interesting, right? Because there's some opportunities there, like with Blue Note and Billboard, and, you know, a number of other clubs there that will, you know, they'll give you three dates and they'll fly the whole band out and everybody can do fine, you know.
Yep.
But it's like, you know, there's a pretty established infrastructure for a lot of these venues that seem to, especially in Europe, that seems to not be, it's a different economy than like the rock and roll economy.
Where
it's not hard. They're not hard tickets, right? They're not totally dependent on ticket sales alone to sustain themselves.
Yeah. Are you booking yourself or is you have an agent that does this?
I have an agent in Europe, but for the States, it's myself. And,
really?
You know, and oh yeah. And
congratulations. I mean, you're doing a great job.
Well, hey, I don't know about that, but I mean, it's like I said, it's just sort of, I've worked with different people over the years, but in a lot of ways I'm with my own stuff. I haven't put out a record in 5 years and this is sort of, I'm sort of starting over in that regard, you know, and I mean, post pandemic and I'm working hard at it and I'm learning lots. It's something that I really want to, that I've really, you know, intentionally and seriously shifted my focus towards. So we'll see how it all goes, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the album's wonderful. So I, you know,
thank you so much.
It's just getting people to listen to it and come to the shows. That's the hard part.
That's right.
Apart from the 335 and the tellies, what's the rest of your collection look like?
Yeah. I mean, I have a lot of, like, you know, I have a lot of guitars by Moulin that they've generously sent me. I have an older, it's a 56 Martin 00M. So it's like that mahogany built. And I recorded I made a solo record called Pittsburgh on that guitar in 2021. And that's a guitar that I play really, really often that I love.
Yeah.
Amp wise, the other stuff that I find myself playing a lot is I have a 66 Princeton that I love and play often.
Yeah.
I have a 62 Showman.
Wow.
You know, which I bought when I was like, I was when I first moved to New York, I took a bunch of lessons with Adam Rogers and I still just think he's an unbelievable person and like one of the best to ever do it. And someone I've always really admired, and he had a Showman. So I thought I should get a Showman too. Maybe I'd sound like him. So that one kind of, I don't play that one as much anymore just because it's like, but it's because you know, it's a head and I got to have a cabinet board and all that stuff. But I find myself, I have more stuff than I have a lot of stuff and I find myself continually just going to the 335, I mean to the telly and the AC.
Yeah. Right on. And
yeah.
So when you play shows, when you're playing shows in Europe, are you doing backline or are you taking stuff with you?
If it's with, it depends. Like, if it's fly dates and whether it's with Franzo or Terry Lynn or another artist or myself, it's all backline. And I mean, the only time I've taken stuff with me has been on domestic bus tours in with Esperanza in the States. That's it.
Yeah. And are you still using AC-30s if it's a backline? Yeah. Right on.
Yeah.
Are they pretty reliable?
Yeah. Yeah. That was the other thing. I found them to be more consistent than the Fender reissue stuff for me, you know, like they sounded more, they sounded just like night to night. It felt like I was getting, you know, more. They were more consistently the same than different. And I was finding that I used to backline deluxes, and I would find that, like, you know, it would feel like entirely different amplifiers. You know?
They probably beat the shit and repaired it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because everybody asked for a deluxe, and
I know
the AC30 not so much. Like,
yeah,
so
yeah,
they're probably in better shape.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm sure that's right. You know, yeah, exactly. They probably all groan and they go, "Oh man, I got to load that on the delivery truck." But other than that, yeah.
Yeah. So apart from music and everything, what do you do for fun? What do you do?
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm pretty busy. I have three little kids. I have a nine-year-old son, a 10-year-old stepdaughter, and an 8-year-old stepson. And like, wow. And so it's pretty full on between the touring and the teaching, and then like everybody's, you know, baseball practice and, yeah. You know, this kind of stuff and running around. It's a pretty full schedule. But I mean, like, I think that going back to what we were talking about earlier, like, I think the fun I have is the touring, you know. It's like, it's such an unbelievable thing to kind of have built into your life, you know, especially when you get to do it with your friends, you know.
Yes,
so
exactly.
Yeah, there's really like, there's really nothing like it. So I feel really, really fortunate to get to do that on a regular basis.
Oh, yeah. Right on. Well, congratulations. Yeah. And it's great to meet
Thanks.
You, Matthew.
Yeah, you as well. Yeah. Thanks for having me, James. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Best of luck to you. And I'm sure, I'm sure you'll do well. You're already doing great.
Thanks so much. Yeah. Thanks for taking the time.
My pleasure.
Nice to
My
meet
pleasure.
You. Okay. Okay. Yep. Talk to you soon. Later. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yep.
Thanks for listening to Have Guitar Will Travel. You can catch up on all the things I'm doing at thedeadlies.com. And I'm on all the social media platforms as well. And please support Vintage Guitar and all the wonderful things they do, because they do many, many wonderful things for us guitar players. Thanks. Please subscribe. Please tell a friend. And I'll see you guys next week. Bye, guys. We'll be right back.